And that's what I want to talk to you about, where the policy is incoherent, the metrics are non-existent, and yet it's dominant in certain, it's a major part of U.S. global health policy, even if it's unarticulated. And that has to do with fragile states. Fragile states are it's a term that is very unpopular now, but there's no other word people have come up with to describe states that are characterized by poor governance, conflict, or instability. And these lead to limitations on donor funding beyond meeting humanitarian needs. These are states like Zimbabwe, Burma, states coming out of wars, Central African Republic. Haiti is often referred to as a fragile state. The definitions are squishy, but what we do know is in these states, 15% of the world's population lives, but the health indicators are the worst. They represent about 30% of maternal deaths, and of the 10 states with highest maternal mortality, 9 of them are considered fragile states. They're home to 50% of the children who die before the age of 5, and a third are of those who are affected by HIV/AIDS. So this is an important global health issue. What do we do about fragile states as a donor country? Well, let's look at what our current policy is. The development approach announced by the president broadly says that we want to advance stability in the long term and that development assistance is not charity. And more specifically, we have the new Global Health Initiative, which tries to tie together PEPFAR with other global health programs and acts on certain principles. The principles of country ownership we've heard so much about, accountability, linkages to quality of government, linkages to private investment so there'll be economic development, focus on health systems and sustainability, and linkages to human rights, especially for women. And these are terrific principles, but they tend to leave out fragile states. They leave out fragile states because country ownership is very problematic in some of them. They leave out fragile states because private investment doesn't really exist because no one wants to invest. And the Global Health Initiative says absolutely nothing about fragile states. And actually, I was at a meeting with one of the USAID administrators for fragile states, and I said, well, what about these states? And I was told they're not left out. Well, that's not a very good answer. We know that some fragile states, get an enormous amount of U.S. money. 10% of all U.S. development personnel, for example, are in Pakistan, Iraq, and Afghanistan. And we know that an equivalent amount of money, probably more than 10%. We also know that when you traditional health measures, like decline in mortality, are used after there have been major investments in health systems in fragile states, there are often good outcomes. Not always, but there has been a record of some investment in some fragile states, and I listed some of them. But the current rationales for health development in fragile states is really quite different than simply developing health systems and accountability and meeting the needs of women. Part of the talk is about winning hearts and minds in the United States. Tough policy to measure. But it tends to skew interventions to those with quick impacts, because if you want to win hearts and minds, you want it to do it tomorrow. You don't want to do it in 10 years. So we tend to skew those interventions. We also want to improve the image of the United States. Again, that's going to happen quickly. And here's the most undefined of all, which is promoting short-term security. For example, on the Horn of Africa, there's all kinds of investments in health going on specifically for the purpose of improving short-term security and preventing the development of terrorism. And there are no metrics to measure that. And that also skews policy by focusing on populations of strategic interest. It has nothing to do with all those principles I outlined about the Global Health Initiative. So what we've got is we've got these kind of vague policies which are driving a lot of money. And this came to a head in Afghanistan, actually. In Afghanistan, there was a major initiative which has been quite successful in developing a primary health system called the Basic Package of Health Services. USAID with European and World Bank donors have developed this program. But when the new counterinsurgency policy came into play last year, there was a great deal of pressure to move the money out of the U.S. money, at least, out of the Basic Package of Health Services and into the counterinsurgency strategy and focus on the areas where the military had the greatest interests. On top of that, the strategy sees a great role for the military. And the military in Afghanistan has a lot of health interventions going on. No metrics whatsoever to measure either health impact or security. So in Afghanistan, that tension was resolved where the Basic Package of Health Services was preserved. It's still being debated. But we have this amazing tension that is never discussed in major policy terms. If we do discuss it, if we do discuss what is the policy on health in fragile states, there are a lot of problems. One is that quick impact, high visibility projects, A, have little record of success where they are measured on even on their own terms. And they often tend to undermine building a sustainable health system. This is the critique of aid, more generally, that is spot on when it deals with quick impact projects. Donating x-ray machines or building a clinic and then 5 years later not having the electricity or the staff to run it. Focusing on the U.S. image, remember winning hearts and minds, improving perceptions, is very different than strengthening the capacity and legitimacy of a national government, which of course is part of the Global Health Initiative. And very importantly, this instrumental approach, that when I say instrumental, I mean achieving ends other than health, security, perception, diplomatic gain, is completely at odds with the principles of equity, non-discrimination, non-discrimination we fought so hard for so many years to gain and have been successful in gaining. And there's no evidence whatsoever from anywhere in the world that the military role in building health system achieves either strategic or health goals. I think I said that. I actually got ahead of myself on Afghanistan, but I do want to point out that the Basic Package of Health Service approach and the support for the Ministry of Public Health has resulted in a 25% decrease in child infant and under five mortality. That's about 100,000 lives saved a year. That's a result of an enormous increase in access to primary care health services, training of women to provide health services. The range of military activities in Afghanistan have had no impact that anybody can find. So then we ask, we've got the Afghanistans of the world, but what about the Central African Republics of the world, those where there is no strategic interest? Those are left out almost entirely. And sometimes they're left out fairly deliberately, like Zimbabwe, because we don't want to support the government in any way. And there's little thought to what alternative to the desperate health circumstances in these countries. So what we say is, well, we'll give humanitarian aid. And we channel aid through NGOs and contractors, sometimes, as in Zimbabwe, pretty much in direct competition with a health system that had been functioning reasonably well for that part of the world, stressing local resources further. there is an alternative approach. And the first thing we have to do is recognize that there's a problem. That if we're talking about aid effectiveness, we ought to be serious about it in all countries of the world. We have to recognize that global health policy needs to be founded on human rights and health seen as a core social institution. And we have to support health systems in fragile states just as we do in other states. This is not easy, but we have to recognize some new metrics. There may well be a possibility that supporting health systems can strengthen government accountability and strengthen the opportunity to develop a legitimate government. We don't know, but we ought to find out. We can also look at whether health system interventions can be a mechanism to end marginalization that in turn can destabilize societies, which of course is one of the security-related goals. And then what we would do is try to talk seriously instead of haphazardly about the problems of the Zimbabwes and the Burmas and the Central African Republics of the world. What are the ways we can build capacities without supporting corrupt and repressive central governments? And the answer is not we can't. That is not the answer. And it's one of the paradoxes. I can't prove this, but I want to leave you with this thought. Health ministries tend to be so marginal in these countries from a political standpoint that they can be strengthened without having any impact on politics. And the reverse of that is that the central government doesn't care. So you might be able to strengthen the health system in Zimbabwe without supporting Mugabe. You just have to figure out how the money has to flow so it doesn't go through the Ministry of Finance where it'll be stolen. But until we start thinking about these questions and talking about them, we're not going to get anywhere. And we're nowhere as far as the Global Health Initiative is concerned. So I urge you to start thinking about this and to start bringing this subject up so the poorest, most vulnerable, most oppressed people in the world, who on top of not getting decent health services, live in repressive regimes, can begin to have a measure of justice. Thank you.
Thank you. So we've seen perspectives from the private sector, the faith-based organizations, vision of how long the development process can take, looking at Thailand and the conflict in which we are, and what are the values, what is the basis of this aid effectiveness, human rights or military interests. So with that, the floor is open. Who would like to ask a question to move forward? Please go ahead.
Thank you.
Would you please introduce yourself and stand up so the others can hear you? Thank you.
I come with the Harvard School of Public Health. I work with Deborah Jobin for on aid effectiveness, aid policy, and so on. So thank you so much. I unfortunately missed the first two presentations, so just we're here for the final two. But I like them very much. And I just wanted to come to the final challenge and want to raise that issue. Many people seem to think there are just two ways of delivering aid to countries. You give the government the money, or you do it with NGOs. And I think practice shows in a number of countries there are lots of ways in between, and there's a whole wide spectrum of how to do it, earmarking funding. But even if in countries, for example, external partners were just aligning to the priorities of government in the way they program and the way they work with, even with NGO partners, a lot can be done to strengthen the
absolutely
health system and the whole Ministry of Health.
Good.
It seems to me sometimes it's almost schizophrenic that on one hand, lots of the people in public health emphasize the importance of strong health systems and the stewardship of the Ministry of Health. And at the same time, they have no eye for that at all when they start programming, when they go into countries and they do stuff without ever considering how that might play into a bigger scheme. And I think we have to wake up to that. It's complicated stuff. It's time consuming. It takes
years. But it's time
to
bring it up.
To know that. But I just want to raise how can we do that? Because I think there is a kind of a sleeping awareness and we have to just wake up.
I think we need to bring it up. Very good. Thank you. Yes, sir. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
With the partnership, actually, my name is Chris Anthony. I'm Mr. Professor at the National Institute of Medicine. So I work as a health advisor for Korean ODA in Korea.
Oh,
and
Good. The question was about how to do better monitoring and evaluation, especially when you have vertical programs that are disease-oriented. And who would like to take that question?
Well, I think that...
go ahead.
I think it's fortunate that there's kind of a global consensus about what should be achieved in terms of certain health outcomes. That is what precisely MGDs have helped for a lot of countries to gain clarity about. Particular aspect our project benefited from was precisely the societal understanding that there was something they wanted to achieve in terms of maternal mortality, the reduction of maternal mortality, the reduction of child mortality, and what were the most likely interventions, or the interventions that would most likely reduce those outcomes. So the idea was to monitor, and the idea is to monitor those interventions, and at the end you have seen that the reduction of maternal mortality has actually happened. Now, that is one aspect. The way it is done, or the process, is what perhaps is going to be an area of contention. So it is important that at the early stages of the project, there's a conversation with the stakeholders in which those elements that are going to be monitored are discussed and defined and agreed. Without that preliminary discussion, it's very difficult to have later agreements. I mean, could happen, but would be imposed in a not necessarily in a healthy way. Now, that is the good part of the story. The difficult part of the story is the monitoring of the financial resources. And in that particular case, it is important to acknowledge that the interests go beyond the agencies that are, let me pedal back a little bit here, when monitoring financial resources, it is important to acknowledge that there are institutions that have the capacity to exert or to legally enforce the adequate execution of the project and the adequate utilization of those resources. Counting in this case, and I don't know how it would play in more challenging setups, but counting with a legal framework and making reference to that legal framework when monitoring financial resources is incredibly useful.
Mm-hmm. Good. The legal framework always helps. Good. Yes. Your question, ma'am.
My further question is, I think I'm a conversation. I would like to congratulate all the speakers for the stimulating presentation and trying to address the issue of effectiveness. I'm talking from my experience, both as sitting on both sides of the table, while working with UNICEF as someone talking, negotiating with partners in government to effectively utilize resources that would come into the country. And when working with my government in the Ministry of Health, negotiating with those partners as to how those partners should respond and fit into the country's priorities. However, all said and done, I'd like to go along with the last speaker from the panel that it's very, very important that there is the governance is the most critical issue. Yesterday we were discussing about the Millennium Development Goals and human rights approach to development, and the points that you raised today as principles were exactly the same principles that were raised and discussed yesterday, because these are core principles of development. Development within the context of human rights, the main duty bearer of a group of people in the final analysis ends up to be the government, mm-hmm. regardless of being a private party, non-governmental organization, religious, and otherwise. Yes, as an going into a community as an NGO or as a change agent, we either stimulate for change, accelerate what's going on there, or build the capacity for people to think and initiate their own priorities in development. those help to stimulate the process. Mm-hmm. But in the final analysis, to have a scaled-up intervention reaching all the needy in a country situation requires the government's responsiveness to this. So what brings them home is the fact that we as health development workers are not devoid of other development work. So when talking about public health, we have to talk about the governance. We have to talk about how to make those political objectives and gains to fit into the democratic system building within the country.
It's a process.
So that's
correct.
That process will enhance the health initiatives that we are trying to introduce. So, like for example, when I was working in my country as a public health official during the military government, many of the donors used to come and raise these issues. But you are using our development aid to support the military government to kill people. But I used to argue, no, we are not doing that. We as health professionals are trying to protect the health of these people. But the government is doing what they have to do. If we withdraw this assistance, then we are disempowering those people, and more misery is imposed on the people for whom we are claiming to work for, to advocate for.
That's
so
right.
It's as a development worker in a developing country, it is important that we grasp the bigger
the issues that we raised here.
That's right. And try to bring in multi-sectoral development players to have a space in this exercise.
That's correct.
So that whatever change wants to bring it within the government system, like the Mugabe's and the Duvaliers and the others, somehow would change through the empowerment of people to bring about that change, the people of that nation, of that constituency. But as health development workers, we may feel that we don't have a say in that, but keeping the health of those people would empower us.
It goes beyond health.
Yes.
That's correct. That's correct.
I'm
sorry, but it's already time. Thank you very much for that comment. I think we can have one more question, please. Yes, please, go ahead. Can you speak louder?
My name is Patricia. I'm from Nigeria. I just came in and I had a two last presentation. My question is actually on about monitoring and resilience. I think basically, in the case of resilience, most of what is on ground, I feel, is on ground. A lot of effort is put on numbers instead of the results. So despite the NGO, the money comes, the grants come, and they are working, they really want to produce money and not even themselves. But they go into the rural area, they come in and they say, we need numbers to get back to the whoever, wherever the money is coming from. If you don't get just give us this number, the grants will be cut short. And it's affecting the people, like anybody, most people know about this, and I don't think there's a way. The system itself can also be strengthened to make sure that the result is for a bunch of the members who get back to the children to say, this is done, the mortality rate has come in time, but actually they still as low as it is. On paper, it's a different thing, but the reality is a completely different. I don't know how it can be done from here, because this is where
I think you're already doing something about it. You're speaking about it. That's very important to do. Very good for you. Keep talking about it, because getting numbers just because of getting numbers, it's not going to make any difference. So, we all play those games, and we need to stop them. Good. Thank you very much. Please help me thank all the presenters, and I invite you all to join us again next year.